Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. As I look at the news, from the balloon fiasco to everything that is going on, see, we basically had the bill get out of committee, but because, and these are the tactics that happen, and so we really need to take the state legislations back, or the legislatures, to be clear. We need to get constitutional conservatives. I don't even like using the word conservative because it doesn't create the connotation that they're constitutional. And so there's a big difference, folks. There is a huge difference. As a matter of fact, I look at Idaho. They've got all sorts of conservatives, and they're losing their liberty by the clip. And so what we have to do is we've got to start making an issue out of the Constitution by using First Amendment petitions. This is the way we're going to be able to beat the weeds and beat the bushes and go through the woods and chase out all of these rhinos, all of these conservatives that don't know what the heck they're doing. They're doing what they're told. Oh, well, you know, we were told that this was the bill they wanted. Stop listening to the lobbyists. Stop listening to those who are causing all of this problem. The party. There's very few parties that are standing up. And the only place I've got the endorsement and support from the party is in Wyoming. And so, yeah, I hear people complain about the party in Wyoming. And I'm going, you know what? You need to go to other states, because at least they have a Republic Review Committee at, you know, at the state level and working into the counties. But anyway, what ended up happening in Wyoming? We're not dead in South Dakota, but what ended up happening in Wyoming? And then I'll tell you about where we are in South Dakota and what happened on Friday. And tomorrow will be Feedback Friday. It'll be last week's Feedback Friday, because I drew some conclusions on our long three-staged interview with Bill, and I want people to understand, and actually what we're going to cover today kind of helps put together the pieces of, you know, what I was saying regarding shadow government. So in Wyoming, one of the ploys that they do is they feed a whole bunch of bills into the system and overload it, so that as the committee chairs cherry pick what they're going to do with each particular bill, they, you know, sometimes they'll just rush it through and they'll pass it, and you'll think, oh, well, that's a good thing. No, because there's certain bills that they will earmark as these will be heard on the floor. It doesn't mean that all of them can't be heard on the floor. There's only so much time to hear the bills that they endorse and they want to have, to debate and go through the voting process so that they can wrap up coming up in March. They've already wasted or gone through a month. I'm not sure if you've seen my constitutional minutes. I have not got them up. I need to actually take care of the getting that up on the website. And hopefully we'll have that done by tomorrow. Nevertheless, I don't know if we're completely dead, but for right now we're dead because it's not going to get to the floor. But at the very end, if there's time that they can actually pick up another bill, so what we have to do is we have to hope, pray, and lobby that they reach back into the other bills that were left, that they go, well, what else can we do? What else can we pass? And it's really important that they understand why this bill will immediately start saving them money. because of what this bill does, they will no longer need to have a debate over an Article 5 convention, because they'll actually have a committee that will be going through. In other words, it'll stifle any debates on considering a petition until this committee completes its assessment. And what its assessment is, and it does more than just an assessment, and I've got to make a picture out of it, but it'll get up onto the website. Hopefully by next week, we've got a flow chart that goes and identifies how this bill will work and flow. But bottom line, this committee will actually first do the most important thing, definitize the Constitution to say, we do not recognize, you know, how you interpret the Constitution, your living Constitution, or the annotated Constitution, that we only recognize the original text of the Constitution that was ratified by the 13 states, the original text of the amendments, and the debates in Congress over those amendments. And more importantly, when it comes to the Constitution, we only recognize the ratification debates and how it was defined during the period of ratification. That's fundamental contract law. So anyway, there's hope, but it's frustrating. There's a lot of people, and during the testimony, it was very powerful that we had a state legislator stand up and say, this is my constituents' number one issue right here. We've got to get this through. And that was Representative Locke. And I'm going, awesome. This is just great. Unfortunately, the chair and the chair of all the committees in Wyoming they're not champions of the Constitution. I don't want to call the chair of the Judiciary Committee, you know, one way or the other. It's just that he seems, what's a good way? He just doesn't have the motivation, or he just doesn't have the conviction that, you know, they even have the power to do anything. I honestly think a lot of these folks that are in office are just that ignorant regarding the Constitution. And this is why the globalists are getting away with everything they're doing. I'm telling you, folks, it's all about ignorance. So anyway, what we do want to do is get into the South Dakota bill real quick. It is finished. So it was pulled out of the committee to go for changes. You know, and what it was really maybe a punctuation change. I don't know what the changes were, but it was one of those things that if you don't want the bill to be killed, you have to get it, you know, pull it back out of the committee that they threw it into, and then that committee will just move forward, and then you want to, you know, make a minor change to it and then feed it into another committee so that it can see the light of day. And so, you know, my hat's off to Representative Randolph. And one of the things that's, you know, being exposed is this corruption in the South Dakota legislature, where they have machinations and strategies of how to get rid of good, what they consider the conservative constitutional representatives. And so Julie Freimuller was one of those, and she was removed temporarily, and then they just reinstated her and censored her. And the fact that they censored her, you know, over something, they offered her no due process, and she was just basically speaking her position on something. And because it offended the person that was listening to it, then, you know, the person just kind of complained. And that they're doing anything and everything they can. So this goes to show you how South Dakota and most of the state houses, this is the kind of politics that they play, that the rhinos are not Republicans and they're not your friends, folks. You need to really start a campaign to start educating people on the true nature of a rhino, because these folks are shills for the globalists. They're shills for power, and they're shills for stomping and basically blocking any type of good conservative legislation to come forward, because they know they can't get Democrats in office. And I've been telling people the way to shut out these poor, unqualified people in office is to start having standards. And so I think more and more people, and I think as the Republican Party, because there's an upsurge in South Dakota, that the Republican Party in a few counties is being taken back by, you know, constitutional conservatives, and people are getting very invigorated in doing that. And as they do this, one of the most important things that they do is that they create vetting standards. And actually, this is happening in Washington State. They're trying to create vetting standards, you know, on the Constitution, at least in some of the counties that I know. And so that's what you have to do. You need to start demanding that these guys, everybody, not just the Republicans, you demand that everybody takes a test, that nobody should be able to just get their name on a ballot. You know, you just, it's not about these qualifications. See, the Constitution says that you can't have religious tests. Well, it doesn't say you can't have constitutional tests. You can't have standards to say, if you don't understand the Constitution, if you can't pass a test, then you shouldn't be on the ballot. And so what we want to make sure is they make tests that are actually, you know, detail-oriented in the questioning and the answers that line up with the ratification debates, not Hillsdale College. You know, as I look at what Hillsdale College is doing, they're offering people education on the living Constitution. They accept a lot of things that are unconstitutional, and they don't teach you that these things are unconstitutional. Sometimes our worst enemy is the people that we trust that we think are good. And so sometimes we're our worst enemy, because we're so hard on ourselves. We judge ourselves so harshly. You know, I get that. But one of the real enemies we have to be very aware of are those that are in our ranks that are trying to deceive us and actually trying to take us down a very, very dangerous path. Now, we covered the South Dakota update. We've kind of covered, you know, the updates altogether. I don't think that there. Oh, yeah. So when we come back, I'll tell you what happened on Friday. It's the same old. But what we're going to do is we're going to actually get into American Republicanism and the Tory Acts today. And then tomorrow will be Feedback Friday, like I said. But we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Well, so as you know, we basically had a bunch of dead air on Friday, and that had more to do with, because it's not uncommon that they knock me off. It's not, I'm probably the show on the airwaves that gets hit the most as far as getting knocked off. And so we don't know what ended up happening, but we do know that because our server that we launched from is in England, all I can say is there's little ploys. I'd love to get to the bottom of this, but these little types of interruptions, I apologize, we have to live with, because It's just the nature of, you know, radio, because when you're broadcasting and the way you, when they syndicate broadcasts and so forth, they either do it via satellite or via the internet or what have you. And I think there's part of this is being done via, you know, internet satellite type of stuff. But it's not the same. It's not the same as like what's coming off Sirius XM and those types of platforms, because they're far more sophisticated. When your platform doesn't have some redundancies and so forth, it's kind of easy to attack and knock out. And so the best way to do it is by using a denial of service. So we thought we took care of this. As a matter of fact, you know, maybe I jinxed myself. I was just telling the guy, it seems like ever since we made these changes, I haven't been knocked off the air. I mean, it, you know, what we ended up doing, we thought was a solid improvement in innovating of how to, you know, get my broadcast without being denied or getting these denials of service. But nevertheless, we were shut down at the server side. So it basically made the show unavailable. Now, this doesn't happen that often, and when it does, though, we have to kind of put up with it. But, folks, one of the things I want to tell you, and I'd love to give you evidence, if you have a Gmail account and you wanted me to send you an email, Gmail will actually mark it as spam and harmful and put it in your spam folder. And so one of the things that we want to make sure that you start recognizing is big tech is doing everything they can to silence the opposition of what they're trying to do and what they're trying to get away with. And so, to be clear, you know, what we're doing is important, that they recognize what we're doing. And so we can only ask that you just kind of have some forbearance and forgive us for the inadequacies. I have been telling people, and so I've tried to talk to Dr. Frank. I have tried to talk to Mike Lindell. I have tried to talk to these guys. I've had direct links to them, phone numbers and so forth, and they don't want to talk to me. I'm telling you right now, unless we get a real good conservative to own the brick-and-mortar cloud computing platform, and basically own the hardware almost all the way out, you know, to where it actually hits the internet, then there's very little we can do from being deplatformed. And deplatforming is going to happen because there's only a few mechanisms. When they create these monopolies of, you know, who controls what, and then they can control who can say whatever they want. They can start deplatforming people. And I hope people start understanding the magnitude and the importance of all of this. So anyway, what we need to do today is we need to cover American republicanism and we need to cover the Tory Acts. But I have one more go back. One of the other important things that we need to do to survive and to actually move forward is to start having some national meetings and national conversations and so forth. So this month, or hopefully by the end of this month, I'll actually start and I'll pull the trigger on getting people available and having these monthly or weekly calls so that we can actually get people on the line that are talking about what they're doing. And what we need to do is we need to keep this, you know, kind of capped at a 1 hour time limit. And so what we need to do is we need to make sure that we can have different people talking about what they're doing regarding First Amendment petitions and so forth. And so for people to get into the agenda, for you to, you know, actually be able to, you know, have a voice and to talk and so forth, because we'll open your mic for you if you send us an email and you're telling us what is going to happen, what you're doing, how you're doing it, or what have you, because you got to get placed onto the agenda to be before we can actually put you on, you know, the air or to be able to talk. Now, this is not going to be live broadcast. This is going to be in a conference room, a virtual conference room. So Anyway, we're hoping that this actually helps people start to connect and start sharing information. And so that way we can actually start giving, you know, everybody interconnections, so that the intent is to try to help cross-pollinate, to help, you know, develop and nurture other people and getting their movements going. Because if they're having these problems and running into this brick wall, then what do we need to do to fix this? And, you know, what do we have to do? Do we have to have a lawyer to set up a 501c4, what have you? Anyway, this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. So, American republicanism. Most people understand a republican form of government is a representation of the people, or representative government of the people, and it is based on the rule of law. In other words, the law is king. We don't have a monarch. The law is our monarch. However, today, as I've told you, our form of government is really more of a monarchical party, democratic, socialist system. That's the form of government that we have, because most all of our public servants, most of them, that if they're not constitutional, they're not public servants. They're princes and princesses and you know, little dukes and duchesses. And they have this they have this air that they really believe that they're better than everybody else. They're, because they are above the law unless they violate their oath of office. And there's the problem. Many of them are violating their oath of office. Even in South Dakota, it states that if you've been convicted of violating your oath, then you absolutely need to, you know, be kicked out and you can't serve anymore. And so, folks, I'm finding that the laws actually exist in some of the constitutions that you cannot violate your oath of office, and nobody's going through the facts of proving this. And so maybe what we actually have to do is we actually have to, you know, when we start putting bills, there needs to be a caveat that this bill needs to be passed because this bill requires the, you know, the full enforcement of the Constitution, which means that you're obligated to support this bill or you will be removed from office, because if you vote against it, then you will be removed because you're not supporting the Constitution as this bill will support. There's no argument. There is no argument whatsoever when it comes down to whether this bill should be passed or not. Even if they come along and say, oh, well, it's going to cost money. Every bill costs money. And what this bill will do is will actually save money, because the way we've proved this is as this bill, the bill that we have, will go through what the state is doing. Many of the things the state should be defunding, standing down, and stop doing. And that means that they're saving money. So I think that this is the angle that we have to take, is because I've gone through a few state constitutions where I know in South Dakota they actually have this law, and I'm hoping to try to really bring this around so that people, and we can create, I'll just say it's got to be a movement. We have to have people on the ground that are demanding compliance to the Constitution. But what we need to do is finally get a state legislative service office, LSO, or, you know, the guys that write the bills and make sure they're legitimate or what have you, make sure that they create a rule to that identifies that this bill is a mandatory bill. In other words, this bill calls for complete compliance to the Constitution. So remember when I said that politics is not allowed in America on specific things? When it comes to supporting your Constitution and, you know, supporting your oath of office and fulfilling that by supporting the Constitution, then that is when you are obligated to vote in support of the Constitution. So what we need to do is finally get it to a point where when these types of bills come forward, when resolutions come forward, anybody that wants to vote against it, okay, fine, you're out, you're gone. You don't have to be a public servant. You want to play? The one thing that you're legally obligated, and thankfully, this is actually in the state constitutions, at least some of them that I've found. Now, what you can do is you can help me by actually getting your state constitution into a Word document and organize it. And so what I will do is I'll put up a sample of the Word document of the South Dakota Constitution. So that way you can download it, you can take a look at it, you can say, okay, this is how GR wants to, you know, have our state constitution. I don't have time to do all 50 states. I don't have time to do all of the work. And so if you want me to start helping you in your state, then the first thing we've got to do is we've got to get your state constitution into a Word document. And so what we will do is we will work with you, but we have to understand the Republican form of government. So again, why are we going over these constitutions? Because in the state of South Dakota, their constitution is king, and the king of that king is the U.S. Constitution for the United States. That constitution is the king of the entire land, and all laws and all things must be in concert with that. It must be harmonious with the U.S. Constitution. So with that, when we come back, we will talk about representation and sovereignty in a American republicanism government. As we've redefined republicanism, what is sovereignty in America? So we'll be right back after this promo to explain that to you. Thank you so much.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so during the Constitutional Convention, because what we want to focus on now, we kind of understand that the rule of law in a Republican form of government is king. That is what, you know, is the overall, has the final say. Now, the problem comes in when sometimes we run into something where the law doesn't necessarily cover it. So then the question is, who should cover it? Well, let's get into the sovereignties, and then we'll get into who should cover the problems that aren't covered by the law. Because when we look at this concept of sovereignty, what we have to do is we have to recognize, so to be clear, sovereignty is the person or thing that has the ultimate say, whether that be a crown, a position, like at a corporation, who is the sovereign? And so that would be a CEO. That would be the president of the corporation. That would be whoever is the leader at that point in time. Not necessarily a person's name. It is a chair who is filling the seat, which can change. And so in our government, our sovereigns, the most powerful people that we have are our representatives, our executive is not a king. He has no power to do anything other than to execute the law that our sovereigns create. So who in a republican form of government are our sovereigns? Well, throughout the annals of history, republican form of government and their representatives was the representatives of the people. In other words, when we look at representation in Rome, when we look at representation in England, as we look at all the different governments of representation, it's always been the people. In America, when they were forming the Constitutional Convention, there was no way the states were going to adjoin to and create a union where the apportionment, because they didn't like the way things were being apportioned in the Continental Congress, because apportionment was based on the how many people were in the state, and more importantly, the reason that they were actually able to, you know, create the union under the Articles of Confederation is because each state had to buy into any other changes. So they created a complete limitation and all states were equal. Even though there was a limitation, you got to remember that they didn't live long enough to actually have to prove, because the design of the Articles of Confederation were so flawed that within a few years they had already proven that they didn't have any oomph. They didn't have the general government, Continental Congress, did not have the power to enforce its own laws. It couldn't go to the states and say, you've got to pay these taxes. And see, there's no way the small states would have gotten involved in a government with that kind of power and or authority. Why? Because they felt that the smaller states could easily be taken advantage of and become, you know, nothing. They could be stepped on and they could be ruled. And they understood that they needed to have a level of equality, a level that would protect them. So as Virginia laid out their plan, this was the Madison plan, that the states and the authority would be based on population of the states. The small states completely flat out rejected it. Then the New Jersey plan was presented, and what they were going to do was they were going to basically kind of maintain the existing Articles of Confederation form of government, a single body, all the states had equal footing and so forth. And so the larger states said, well, no, because that doesn't serve us. So anyway, long story short, the compromise, the Connecticut Compromise, or the Roger Sherman Compromise, was to lay out a government and delineate, because obviously serving the people of the nation equally, or I should say based on representation, fairly, so that everybody had the same representation in this sovereign body, was apportioned by population. What they did, though, was they went through the rules and responsibilities and said, you know what, when it comes to war, it doesn't benefit any state. So we're going to make the House of Representatives, the representatives of the people, which is 40, they were going to do it at 40,000. It was 30,000 by the time the Constitution was done. But what they did was they gave the House of Representatives, because all of the people would have to pay, based on apportionment, based on population, an equal amount. So in other words, Delaware would pay a lot less in taxes than Virginia, but they would pay the same per person. In other words, that's how they kind of created this. And this was such a beautiful system, because what ended up happening was they created a separate sovereign body that didn't represent the people but represented the states. And they gave that other sovereign body roles and responsibilities, and everybody had equal footing, equal suffrage. In other words, each state had two senators, and those senators were in there to protect the state's sovereignty. Now, when we had the 17th Amendment come along, it kind of destroyed that concept of how the Senate was supposed to be accountable and responsible to the states. So as we kind of move forward, as we kind of, you know, look at this Connecticut Compromise, Roger Sherman's point was that when we look at representation, representation should represent the sovereigns. And when we create a superior or a, not a superior, when we create a general government, that government should answer to the sovereigns out there. Because what would end up happening is the people, if you gave them, and this has been proven throughout history, if it was only the people who had control of the federal or the general government, then they could actually allow the federal government to do things that destroyed the state sovereignty and state power, or marginalize that. And that's what's been happening because of the 17th Amendment, and that's what's been happening because of the Supreme Court Reynolds v. Sims, and that's what's been happening because the federal government, or I should say Congress, took it upon themselves to start changing the representation instead of following the Constitution that only 30,000 people could be represented by one representative. Technically, we should have almost 7,000 representatives, or maybe even more, based on what the real population is. Actually, the real population, we'd actually maybe even less, because if you've got 40 million invaders in America, they, based on the 14th Amendment, are not allocated representation. That's the beautiful thing about the 14th Amendment. But anyway, when we look at the House of Representatives, it actually started representing the people, but more importantly, the affluent people. Because when all of a sudden you represent almost a million people, the only people you pay attention to are the people with bucks. In other words, the people that help, you know, win your election campaign and so forth. You have a 30,000 representation. It's a lot harder to actually be able to, you know, have somebody come along. I mean, yeah, if you live in a district with Warren Buffett and he can actually throw a lot of money into that district, the framers never envisioned that people would be able to go into an area, into your county, and help use their money to elect those people who they wanted in your county. In other words, that's foreign influence. They considered representation sacred. If you didn't have a dog in the fight, you should not be able to say. Now, this is where gerrymandering and or henrymandering came in, where they started playing with, as the politicians, to try to create districts that would create very specific outcomes politically, so that they would have, you know, liberal and or I would say progressive and or conservative and those types of factions aligned to benefit. And so all of these things are an indictment of how we have lost sight of what our government is supposed to do. But bottom line, we set up a bicameral legislative body like Britain, but unlike Britain, because in Parliament, the two bodies is the House of Commons and the House of Lords. They don't represent the subordinate governments. If they would have, then they would have had representation for Ireland and the Irish states, the Scottish states, the Wales states, instead of allowing an aristocracy to control the House of Lords. See, Britain and the whole world would have benefited from this genius concept of recognizing the sovereigns, the governments that the people create. Now, let's go back to the Declaration of Independence. All governments are instituted by men, or by we the people. And so when we create a government, we delegate to it a level of sovereignty. So when we create a general government to actually manage, you know, as we create this union in the nation, or the union of counties in your states, when we do that, when we go down that path of creating that government, we create a sovereign government as our counties. We'll be right back after this.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when America was formed, when we formed this hybrid constitutional republic, it was a long line of evolution of government. And we can really look back at the real shift in Western society as the Magna Carta. And we can start looking at where the people started being given and written down in documentation, you know, as people use the word codify, that's not correct, as it was galvanized on, you know, in a document such as the Magna Carta, there were inalienable rights that were granted and recognized that the people possessed. And so these rights were protected. And this happened in England. Now, this concept actually started shooting out into a lot of different governments. Obviously, Martin Luther used a part of these concepts in his petitioning, because the right of petitioning government was literally in the Magna Carta, Chapter 61. And it was a guaranteed right. Now, it didn't mean that people couldn't petition. Anybody has the freedom. We all, even in Russia, you can petition, but do you have that right? And in some governments, they can come out and grab you and take you away because you don't have that right. Martin Luther didn't have that right. And the Catholic Church tried to excommunicate and have him removed. Couldn't do it because he was protected enough in the Rhineland that they just couldn't get him out. And what he did was he successfully took the Catholic Church away. But anyway, when they created the United States, it was created by charter, and each charter created a colony, and that colony was designed and set apart for very specific purposes. The Massachusetts state and some of the other states were set up from religious persecution. Most of the states in the Union, though, were set up on commercial endeavors. This is why indentured servitude, slavery, was embedded in the development of the land. And as a matter of fact, blacks were indentured servants for the very beginning. It wasn't until the 1660s somewhere, it's in my book, where they actually, where King George made the decree that all blacks must be slaves in America. All black indentured servants must remain slaves. They can no longer be free. Now, just because they couldn't create an ex post facto law, there were free black men that were allowed to be free in America. They couldn't just come along and take their property away from them and everything else. These people were very successful. Now, unfortunately, they were, I will just say, in that spot of not being able to do anything. And there's no doubt in my mind there's probably harassments and so forth. But to be clear, the history books do show that there were freemen, black freemen, that were existing and a part of the population. And it became difficult. There may have been some who had been, you know, harassed, killed, what have you. I don't know the full history, but I do know the history books do show that there were black freemen from the early settlements to the revolution in America. And so, and I say this because it was probably problematic because as black slaves saw these black freemen, you know, as regular citizens voting and having voice, they'd have to go, well, what kind of system is this? I can't be free, but that guy can. In other words, the animosities and those types of things, because Thomas Sowell points out that slavery didn't necessarily create racism, but racism was a byproduct. And the type of racism we had in America, it became the byproduct. So what King George did, or whoever the king was at the time, that created that edict that blacks would be, you know, all enslaved blacks would maintain and only blacks would be slaves in America moving forward. So anyway, back to, because it's not about slavery, it's about sovereignty in states. And so these 13 colonies, one of them was a Dutch colony, and through migration of Englishmen, colonists that actually moved into the state of New York, they changed the affiliation of that colony from the Dutch crown to England. And I'm going to bet that the Dutch didn't think that that was a good thing, or that the English were playing nice. I'm telling you this because the Americans knew of how immigration or invasions could work against a body, a governing body, which is why they have this demand in the Constitution that we should be protected by invasion. So, all things being equal, when we look at these colonies that were created, each of them created their different, they created their own governments. They had governors who were kind of like dukes and duchesses and were kind of monarchs. And I think Connecticut was one of the first states that actually had a constitution. And over time, this concept of creating constitutions and you know, galvanizing their government in documentation more than just a charter became more and more of a evolution in America. Well, when the king started recognizing that the American colonies were evolving and all of a sudden they were asking for representation, you know, things started stirring. You know, for the longest time, things were going okay. Things were going okay. That, you know, everybody was happy to be Englishmen, and England had this huge footprint of resources. Now, there were lots of things that were in play, but let's focus on the government. We don't need to focus on the Indian Trading Company and all that. The things that were in play that we need to really understand is that these governments evolved. It wasn't established by the people. So every new state that came into the Union, it had to establish itself. Not by the people, but the people had to establish. So when we look at new states, brand new states that, you know, were territories that we just got, Indiana, Ohio, those types of places. And actually, Ohio was a part of the colonies, but Indiana, Illinois, and, you know, Louisiana. So when you look at how they started creating these states, they had to form counties first. And then once the state got enough population to say, okay, 60,000 people in that state or in that territory, you can now become a state. And then they would direct the counties to, because the county governments were formed and the people started voting for their, but they didn't create constitutions. Because back in those days, there was very little to do other than having these fundamental laws that they used at the county level. When they formed into a state and they had territory laws, and most all territory laws were being governed by the federal government. Because if you look at Article 4, Section 3, this is where the federal government can regulate the laws of the territories as they're migrating to become states. And this is where the federal government got they went overboard in assuming powers and roles that they never had as they started creating huge limitations, you know, by keeping land and creating public lands. There was no constitutional standing for public lands in these enabling acts when they were creating states. These were assumed powers, and the states never allowed that, even though the states actually did allow it. They didn't constitutionally allow it by an amendment. And therefore, what they did was unconstitutional. And so this is why we go through the Madison's vetoes and the Monroe veto and the Jackson, all three of these presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. But focusing back on the sovereigns, when these 13 states finally were, you know, seeing the end and the demise of the Articles of Confederation, they created a constitution, and the divine hand of providence came in and basically created this inspired system of recognizing the sovereignty of both the states and the people in the states and guaranteed them representation, which is why each state is guaranteed one representative, and each each state has representation in the Senate. So you have one representative in the House, and you have two representatives in the Senate. Now, as your state grows in population, you'll have much more representation than one, unless the Congress decides to no longer abide by, and that's what exactly what they did in Article 1, is no longer abide by the 30,000 apportionment. In other words, every 30,000 people deserve to have their own representation, which is why we go through the amendments and show that Madison actually created an amendment to grow that representation constitutionally. So in other words, what we have now is the federal government is growing representation of the population. In other words, 750,000 people is one representative. And in so doing, what they have done is they have created this level of tyranny by not following the Constitution. And that's why we need to pass that amendment. We need to pass that amendment, or at least people start acknowledging that Madison wrote an amendment for a very specific reason, to protect representation of the people. And what we've, and this is, they've dissolved both of the houses. But bottom line, folks, the roles and responsibilities for the House of Representatives in Congress is very unique and very specific, and the same with the Senate. When they started forming states, and actually after this Constitution was formed, every state went through their own constitutional convention, and they reformed the states into a bicameral legislative body where the Senates would represent the counties, and the people would be representing the county, or the people of the county. In other words, each county had its own representation, and each county had its own senator. What has happened today is they've moved and put everything down on equal apportionment and formed more of a democracy form of government than a dual sovereignty form of government for bicameral legislative bodies. And the fact is that we now have, and we can't allow this to happen because it's just insane to change the boundaries of our seats of government based on legislation. Because as population centers get bigger and bigger, they gain more representation, and if they start spreading the load to where your county no longer has representation. There are counties, or I should say, there are representatives in California. There are representatives in California that represent 9 counties and all the people in it. And that's the same with their senators. Folks, this was not the design was very specific, that the sovereignties within the states, as well as the sovereign people in the states, were to be represented. And their counties was very significant, and they recognized this. We'll get back into this and then the Tory Acts on Wednesday, but our next episode.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
So, in our next episode, because I couldn't get it all out, our next episode is our last Feedback Friday that we just missed, and then we'll cover our next one on Wednesday.